Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome once again to the Mental Health Comedy Podcast. My name is Ed Krasnick. I'm your co-host. My co-host, the great Jennifer Kolari, will be along shortly. And today, we have a really great conversation with an old friend and a terrific comedian, one of the best working today, Eddie Pepitone. And I have a great conversation with Eddie Pepitone. We always have great conversations. We decided to record this one for posterity. So Eddie Pepitone coming up, Jennifer Kolari coming up. We are the show that unites mental health and comedy. We also practice resilient skills, practice skills of well-being, because mental health is a practice. And that's the last thing I'm going to say that refers to that. It is a practice, like basketball is a practice. And I'm about as good with mental health as I am with basketball. So all of that bouncing along very shortly. And we're going to talk with Jennifer about how to change the direction of your brain. We can rewire our brain. Well, I can rewire my brain. This is all about me. And we're going to talk about that. And I'm also writing a musical about rewiring the brain called Do You Mind? Kidding. Well, kind of kidding. There was a great episode of Ted Lasso. I don't know if you watch that show, but it's really entertaining. And it's also, I think that the character is becoming so popular because you have a humane character, highly optimistic, helping other people. And now you're starting to learn about all the other stuff that goes on underneath with him and with the other characters on the show. And I think it kind of fits with our guest today. As I said, I had a really good conversation with my friend Eddie Pepitone, one of the funniest people, really. And he has a very dark sense of humor. And he also has a very spiritual side and social awareness about the screwed up systems that control our country. So that's all coming up. I love that all of that exists in the same person and in his performance and his writing. So that's really great. I love that conversation. And today's show is brought to you by the Mental Health Comedy Plus Network. You can't have a network unless you have a plus after the name. You cannot. It's a law. And of course, on the network, coming up for the fall season, a couple of really good shows I wanted to highlight, projects. Flip This Spouse is coming up. And this is where couples rebuild their relationships with fabulous challenges, specific challenges to couples, like the maybe you could listen to me for 5 seconds challenge and the I do not snore challenge. And obviously, you're the problem challenge. It's all hosted by DIY therapists and a team of renovation coaches. Flip This Spouse. And a new movie, Southern Discomfort. A new family movie about a widowed veterinarian who falls in love with a local gas station owner who finds out that his family owned the most slaves in the United States. Southern Discomfort. We always like to welcome listeners, no matter what emotional state you're in. Here now are emotional shout-outs. If you respond to yourself in a mirror by saying, "What are you looking at?" welcome. If your GPS refuses to talk to you, welcome. If you think everything is your fault, including the Beatles breakup before you were born, welcome. If the biggest risk you've taken in your life is changing your deodorant, welcome. If you've dropped your phone in the toilet while listening to The Power of Now, welcome. If you've ever been called a dummy by a yoga instructor, welcome. If you think there should be an ice-blended CBD mochaccino welcome. And if you're beating yourself up even now, there's always a place for you right here on the Mental Health Comedy Podcast. It's time once again for my partner, who is known as the High Priestess of Brain Hacks, the Soothsayer of Self-Care, the Ninja of the Neocortex, Jennifer Kalari. And Jennifer, how do you go from being so bent on survival financially to an abundant way of thinking and actually thinking that you can have all of the things that you want and live a life of plenty? And when I say plenty, I'm not talking about becoming a billionaire necessarily. I'm just talking about the feeling of I have plenty of everything.
Yeah.
I'm not even, everything is flowing.
Well, and the feeling of having enough is really important. And so many people don't have that. Even people who are millionaires and billionaires, they're still looking for that next thing, because a lot of us live in this way of thinking like it's that next thing that we're going to buy. It's that next thing that we're going to own. That's actually going to give us enough. And it will never come from something you buy. It will never come from something someone says. It will never come from something you achieve. It will come from you. And I know it sounds so corny, but that is the absolute truth. Nothing external is going to help you with your sense of self. So if we break that down, and it's a very complicated thing, wealth and abundance, and there are people who have very little and feel incredibly wealthy, right? And there's people who have so much and feel completely poverty stricken. And there's some reality, obviously, to it when you're worried about where your next meal is going to come from. But for most of us, although there are some people who are really struggling during the pandemic, but the answer is the same. When you're looking for what you want, think about what you already have. And I know that sounds really hard if you're really struggling, but wherever you have enough, and that could be clean water coming from the tap, it could be sunshine on your face, it could be how many flowers are on a tree or a bush. It's forcing your brain to look at where you already have abundance. Where do you already have plenty? If you're lucky enough, it might be love with your family. I mean, it's everywhere. And if you have this mindset that nothing ever works and you don't have enough and there's never enough, and your brain will believe that, and it will start basically reflecting that back to you in more and more ways. So in order to get what you want, you have to think about what you want instead of what you don't want. And that's really hard. Most of us walk around all day long thinking about what's not working, what isn't happening, what I don't have, what they have that I don't have. And that's a mindset. And your whole neurobiochemistry will set itself to that thermostat.
Can you catch yourself thinking like that and actually say, thank you, brain, for doing your job? I know you're on duty. I do have enough.
Yes. Yes, you can. In fact, that's one of the things that you should be practicing all the time, right? So you first kind of start with, and it's often a feeling, like you see someone that has something you don't have, or your bills are piling up and you don't want to open them, and you have to, but you get that pit in your stomach, you get that awful feeling. And again, the midbrain doesn't know the difference between bills that are piling up and a tiger that's about to leap at you. It's the same thing, right? And so basically, yeah, you put your hand on your heart, which is actually, your hand is actually electromagnetic, and so is the blood in your body. So when you put your hand physically over your heart, what you're doing is you're actually pulling blood to the part of your heart that actually helps you to feel, because we've talked about brain-heart coherence, right? It helps you to center yourself. So you put your hand right on your heart and you say, thank you, anxiety. These bills are real. These financial struggles are real. Thank you for coming out, you know, fighting and being so feisty and sassy and looking out for me all the time. I really do appreciate it. But as difficult as this seems, this is not a life or death situation right now. This is not an immediate emergency. Thank you. You can go. Send it love. I know it sounds so silly, but this is so biochemically accurate. Send that part of your thinking and your brain love for looking after you. It's not the enemy. It's trying to save you. It's just doing too good a job. That will alchemize, that will metabolize, your body will start to slow down a little bit. And then you can start to think about, force yourself to look around your house and say, well, you know what? I've got a lot of light coming in that window. And I do have a lot of dishes and I have a lot of this and I have a lot of that. It sounds so silly, but keep your brain focusing on where you have abundance and force your brain to go there. That thinking, that vibration, your brain will reset, because it really is like a thermostat. It's like a thermostat in a furnace. If you have a poverty mindset, whether you're truly in poverty or not, you could have money coming into your life at some point and you'll end up spending it all and blowing it all because your brain believes, I'm supposed to be poor. I'm supposed to not have that. Money is bad somehow. Money, I can't be a good person and have money, or I have money and it'll disappear. So why get attached to it? Like, without even realizing it, we will have these very strong limiting beliefs that are guardians of our behavior without our awareness.
Yeah, this is really important stuff. It's good stuff. And also, your brain has a function. And to become more and more aware that this is not you, this is your brain actually doing these things. And to relate to it almost like it's something that's working for you.
Yeah, they're programs.
This is a program. You can name it. You can call it out. Oh, this is a program. Yeah. I see. This is a program.
Right.
I program. Okay. I'm shifting right now. I'm going to start thinking about what I want in this moment. But thanks. I see the program running. Yeah. It was good for me when I was a little kid because I didn't understand. Now I understand. It's a program.
Yeah. That's huge. That is huge. The whole conversation today is about regulation. And that's the first way to do it, is to recognize that these are programs that were installed at different points in our life, usually prior to the age of 7. And I don't know how we got talking about money, but money's a good example, right? There are all kinds of programs that run in us that were downloaded by our culture, by our religion, by our parents. You know, we all have different beliefs. You know, maybe our parents believed, you know, you weren't important if you didn't have money, or only rich people can't be nice people, right? Or, you know, if you can't be a good person and have money, or everything good ends up, you know, leaving me. Whatever the belief is, just acknowledging, that's a program. I don't have to run that program. I can choose if I want to run that program. And here's something really very simple, but very complicated. So this is, again, something that you have to kind of work into your life and work into your practice. But when something feels good, it's usually the way to go. And when something feels awful, it's not the way to go. So when you're walking around thinking about what you don't have, or feeling angry, or feeling like people in your life are, you know, are letting you down or whatever, we're doing that ranting thing in our head. We're going to feel gross when we do that. We're going to feel upset when we do that. That is your brain telling you that your higher self, your best self, does not agree. And it's going to show up in ugly, icky emotions in your body. When you can train your brain to start thinking about things that do feel good. Well, let's think about the people in my life that you know, I do feel comfortable with. And let's think about, the people that make me smile and where I do have abundance. And you'll feel it in your body. You'll actually feel different. Our emotions are there to tell us whether we're on the road or off the road. And those negative emotions are our GPS system. They're not bad or good. They're just telling us we're off the road.
One of the best. Find his comedy special For the Masses on Amazon Prime. Here's my conversation with the great Eddie Pepitone. First of all, Eddie,
yes.
I never ask you the question, how are you today? Because I think it's a multi-layered question. I think my question for you is, who are you today?
That is a great question, and I'm so glad you asked. I am Eddie, the spiritual seeker. That's part of it.
Yeah.
I am Eddie, the fancy monkey. You know, that's my favorite term to describe human beings lately. Fancy monkeys. Have you heard that one?
I haven't heard it, but it makes me think that the movie Planet of the Apes would be a lot different if people approached it that way.
yeah, exactly. I mean,
what's the fancy monkey? So fancy monkey, what does it mean to you?
It means that we regard ourselves way too highly because of our egos. We are just fancy monkeys. We have a little bit more development of the brain. You know, there were only a couple of us who did well here. Mozart.
who did well?
He did well here. Mozart, yeah. Galileo.
Right.
Kate Moss, the model.
She did really well. Yeah.
Then the rest of us are like just, you know, the planet is going to, I mean, the human species is on its way out. We can all see that with the eco catastrophe that is right here at our doorstep and happening now. So, you know, if it weren't for Mozart's work and Kate Moss, I don't think we'd even be remembered.
Is there any way that I could put Mozart and Kate Moss in like a house like Big Brother? She would become his Salieri, or she would be Salieri. Would be a great thing.
There would be a lot of Salieri going on. But
yes, there would be. Now, Eddie, I have to ask you, because we had breakfast the other day. Great breakfast, by the way. Thank you.
Yes.
And we I have to ask you, you're vegan. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm going to ask you. What is in your mental health diet? What do you let in and what do you keep out?
Well, you know, that is, as you know, the way we are built. You can have all the book knowledge of what to keep in and what to keep out, but it really is diligent work to make conscious choices in this life. I find that most of the things that I'm choosing are unconscious. Like I unconsciously want to eat now because it's because I'm trying to feel safe. You know what I mean? Like to become conscious of those deep levels of unconsciousness is very hard to do in our lives. And I think it really does take a lot of work and a lot of commitment. And that's one thing I'm working on, is to make my choices during the day conscious.
And they don't always have to be, and I totally applaud you for that. In fact, I am applauding, but my mic setting is off. But the thing is that they don't have to be big sweeping choices.
No.
They can be very small, very, very small, very tiny, almost like, you know, just noticing your thoughts, noticing what you're thinking.
It could
be closing your eyes for a minute and taking a breath. It doesn't have to be this big,
you know,
a big thing.
That's right.
And it doesn't have to take time. It could be momentary. So, you know, but I totally get what you're saying. It is a conscious, diligent practice. It is a practice. But all of that contributes to the energy in the world. I mean, not to sound too California, but if everyone is walking around with the thoughts and the energy that I have sometimes, and you multiply it by a billion, it's like Max von Sydow said in Hannah and Her Sisters, why were there Nazis? It's given the way the world is today, why doesn't it happen more often?
Yes, he's dead. I'd like to sue him.
He was dead when he was alive. Condor is young. He's inexperienced. Move away from the copier. But yeah, it's when you multiply that, I mean, it's what's going on in people's heads that is really unchecked thinking has brought us to this place.
Yeah, but the thing is that, you know, I think the best thing you said there was that these things are small. And a person like me really thinks everything has to be this very big, large, you know, incredible moment, you know?
Right.
And it seems that the secret to mental health is doing little small moments. And I'll give you one concrete example. When I get up, you know, and I feed my cats, and none of this is to brag, but you know, people can get this kind of lifestyle if they, anyway, I feed my cats and I feed my dog, give her her pill. And then the phone and the computer beckon. And there is a choice right there for me. Don't go on social media for at least an hour. That's something I've told myself. At the beginning of the day, do not go on social media for the first hour of the day. Do some spiritual work, which can be, you know, watching Kate Moss. No, it could be whatever, you know, listening to an audio book by Dr. David Hawkins, who I love. Have you gotten into David Hawkins?
No, no.
Oh, wow. He's amazing. I recommend David Hawkins.
Are you opening for Hawkins these days?
No, he's using Bert Kreischer. he likes the shirtless thing that Kreischer does, but
yeah, it's good. It's good.
So that's an example of it. And that choice of not going on social media for my first hour, it can really set the tone of my day. Like, I'm more centered. And then, another choice, let's say the next choice that can affect my day is what to eat. Like, I can eat really sweet stuff that'll give me this, you know, temporary sugar boost, but then I'll crash. So maybe something, you know, a little more nourishing, you know what I mean? And that's what the days are. And then maybe I decide to do some stretches instead of laying down, you know what I mean? And I don't want to frame it like, you know, good, bad, because one of the biggest things that stops mental health growth, I think, is judging yourself, because these habits that we're trying to, you know, these good habits that we're trying to make part of our lives, they're going to be one step forward, two steps backwards sometime. We have to be compassionate with ourselves.
Well, everything that you've said should be on a some kind of a tape or a program or a CD or whatever they're using these days, kind of streaming platform. Although, this is a show. That's right. I forgot. This is a show now. You're listening to the Mental Health Comedy Podcast with our special guest, Eddie Pepitone, with Jennifer Colari, Eddie Pepitone. But I have to say, the way you said what you said, the tone of your voice, first of all, that's what always is fascinating about me about you. Is that you have probably the biggest range in tone, vocal tone, of anybody that I know who's a performer. Other than Patti LaBelle, she had a big swing, but she wasn't that funny, you know. But you're funnier than Patti LaBelle. She has better nails than you do. Her nails are very fun.
Patti LaBelle is not that unfunny. I mean, she beat me out season one Last Comic Standing, but, you know, she was double dipping.
She was double dipping at the time. I did go on, this is how old I am, I went on Star Search, and I actually,
I remember that.
I won a couple rounds, and Kevin James beat me out. He came
is
on.
That right?
Yep, he came on, and he did 2 minutes of fat jokes, and that was lights out, lights out. But that's a whole other story for a whole other show. Now, what you said was fantastic. It was really interesting in the tone of what you, now I find with food, now that we've had, you know, going through COVID, that food is really a comfort, you know, they say comfort food, and I come from a family of eating disorders, you know, but food now is directly a way to comfort myself, and I actually look forward to it. You know, you're in trouble when you're starting to look forward to it's nighttime and you're thinking, what can I make for breakfast? And I'm literally thinking, geez, I could have waffles. That'd be good. And I'm like, and that'll really increase my, like, I'll be happier if I know that I'm going to have waffles. That is not the way you want to live. Now, first of all, we're lucky to be able to eat and to have food and to have what we need. We're very, very, very lucky. Yeah.
Can we pause for the victims of everything right now?
Yeah, the victims of everything, of everything. That, you know what's wrong with that is that you can't specialize, and that way you can't profit from the need, from the victims. If you say everything, then you can't help anybody, really. Because everything is separate now. And I could talk about that too. Every group has to have their community, and every group should be treated the same. Every group should be treated with respect and dignity. Every group. And we should all be able to come together in a diversity of thought, a diversity of culture, and appreciate
these
things.
What the hell does this have to do with food?
It's when I just I'm choosing the same foods over and over again.
What does this have to do with food and habits? All of a sudden, you're on a soapbox.
I did. I got crazy.
That we all should be treated equally.
I got crazy. I lost my way. And you can lose your way in this culture. You can lose your way.
I just don't understand. I feel like we're all so browbeaten by, the thought police that we feel it necessary to make.
Oh, you have to qualify everything. You must qualify everything.
You just felt it necessary to make a speech about how we should all be treated equally in the middle of talking about, do I have waffles?
Yes, because I brought something up. But speaking of waffles, all waffles should be treated equal. The problem is, and that's another issue, the comfort factor with food. You're feeding your emotions. You're literally trying to take care of yourself. And if I said to myself at night, when I was thinking about making breakfast, because that would comfort me, I would say, hey, I really need some comfort right now, obviously, because I'm reaching for that thing. And you know what? I'm just going to give myself a pat on the back. I'm just going to give myself a moment here to realize that I'm a human being and it's okay to have comfort. It's good thing to have comfort. Just that, and move on.
Yeah, that is, that's the thing that I've been learning about. And I think what we're talking about is witnessing our thoughts, which gets back to being and making conscious choices during the day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So witnessing our thoughts and not fucking judging them.
Yeah. And you have, and just have to, it is a practice. It's a conscious thing that you do. Like you say, the draw to go to social media. Okay, so the draw for me to watch, to check the Red Sox score is an enormous draw, even though they're horrible and half the team is on COVID and they can't win a game. I still have to check, and then it screws up my thought process. It's because I'm checking on them. I'm not watching the game. I'm checking on them.
I do the same thing.
If you're a sports fan, you do that. But the thing is, you say to yourself, I know there's going to be a big draw. I know I'm going to want to get to social media. I'm not going to do it. And I'm going to do something else that's going to nourish me. Do you find that when you're actually doing those things that are non-electronic, that it's like you become much bigger than your circumstances all of a sudden? There's a gentle thing to it. I mean, sometimes you get thoughts racing through your head and everything, but there's a whole different quality to living if you unplug from the instant need to do something.
Yeah, I think so. I think what happens is that you feel empowered, is what I think, by not giving in to the impulse for instant gratification on social media, and doing something that you're choosing, like reading a good book, right? It's a good feeling to feel like, I have some agency in my life.
And now you're not a fancy monkey. See, when you're doing that,
fancy monkeys.
Well, you are a fancy monkey, literally. But you're what happens is you become more animal and less human if you give in to instant gratification and you don't make conscious choices. You become more animal and less human.
Well, the only thing I don't like about what you're saying here is that you're rating it, you're judging it.
Well, that's true. That's true.
I'm being serious, you know.
That's like, true. No, it is true.
Like, it's like, oh, so when you do that, you're a good boy.
Right, right. You want to, that's the brain. The brain is trying to control
it. I think a lot of this stuff that people deal with, I know I do, is this thing, I'm a bad boy, I'm a good boy, I'm a bad boy,
sure.
I'm a bad boy, because
sure.
I ate this stuff. You know, it's all about this fucking punishment. And sometimes a key, I remember reading a woman, I forget her name. I read a very interesting woman who said the key to mental health is forgiving yourself.
Well, that's a good,
I think it was
that's
Kate
a good thing.
To,
well, she's done a lot of forgiving. She needs to do a lot of forgiving. No, she's done a lot of forgiving. No, forgiving yourself is an amazing thing because it goes the other way too. Shame is a very powerful thing. And so forgiving yourself, judgment, releasing judgment, and just going easy. I mean, this is the easy way to go. We think it's a different way to go, but this is a kind of an easier way to go. And, you know, there's a gentleness to it.
I think we feel like it's tragic, you know. I'm thinking of myself. It's tragic that we, you know, are our own worst enemy, you know, and the media and the outside world can feed that. I mean, I think, and this is one thing that I get angry at the mental health community in general, and you tell me if this is accurate, but I feel like the mental health community doesn't spend enough time on the forces outside the person that are allayed against the person, i.e. all these corporate forces who want us needing more and saying to ourselves, I am not enough, so we buy their fucking products.
Right. Well, this is the thing that
professionals don't really address the power structure of, you know, this unbelievably sad and brutal system we live under known as capitalism.
So there's mental health, and then there's social action.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's social, you know, being conscious of it, and then social action. Because if we were really conscious of our needs, we wouldn't go out and, I mean, I've done this, you know, all these things I'm talking about, I understand because I suffer from it. During the pandemic, I kept ordering things online, and I still do it. Like, I get excited if I order a pair of Patagonia pants, and you talk about following the Red Sox. I like track it. Where is it? Oh, okay. It was delivered to Sun Valley.
Oh,
where is it in Sun Valley?
You become like a stalker of
you
your own
I mean?
Purchase.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand that. And I, you know, when listening to somebody like Christopher Hedges, like we were talking about the other day, you really do, you are amazed about the unraveling of culture through, you know, through not a lot of people, but very powerful money and corporate greed and what that's doing to the culture. But yeah, I would say this too, because I don't know if you've heard this late. I think I might have sent her to you. Her name is Anna Lemke, Dr. Anna Lemke. She's at Stanford, and she's a neuroscientist. And what she talks about is dopamine and where addiction comes from.
Right.
And the fact that how the brain balances out, like how it wants to feed on dopamine. And this is the this is the root of all commerce. The root of all commerce is that they're manipulating your dopamine. They're trying, and that's a chemical thing. It's actually a physical thing that's happening.
Right. Right.
And that has been going on throughout history, but especially now more than ever. There are different ways to do that.
And yeah. So,
you know.
Well, I dopamine and addiction, has been well documented. By the way, if you want to talk about addiction and mental health, my new number one guru is Gabor Mate.
Oh, and, yes. I know about Gabor Mate.
He is amazing. And his book, In the Realm of the Hungry Ghost, is, you want to read about addiction. And he nails it down to basically in a nutshell, you know, people not getting the love and care that they needed in that formative stage. I think it's zero through 42, but he says mostly 0 through 7.
Yes, 0 through 42 is the correct answer. 0 through 7. Yeah. Well, there's beyond that. The idea of what trauma is, because people walk around through trauma. Yeah. You're walking around carrying this shit.
That's right. That's right. He talks of it. Trauma is the key. And I'll tell you something. I've been working with my shrink. Dr. Kate Moss. No, I've been working with my shrink, and we've been working with trauma, and you know what? It's very difficult to one, unlock the traumatic events, but then once you unlock them, you can, at least for me, I can only work with them in bits and pieces with the trauma a little bit at a time, because it's very, very intense. And our natural defenses are to put those walls up. And, you know, the biggest thing in life is to be vulnerable. You know, because, you know, you want to talk about what is ruling the world, you know, is this invulnerability and this warlike mentality, you know, being fearful instead of vulnerable, you know, warlike. So instead of reaching out to people, we threaten people, you know what I mean?
And yeah. Yeah, and there's a world of stuff under the anger. The anger sits on top of all the other emotions.
The anger sits on top of grief.
Yeah. Grief, you know? Trauma, hurt, shame, all kinds of sadness, all kinds of other things. I don't know if you cry at all.
Well, I don't want to brag about.
You're a good crier.
No, I actually don't cry as much. And, you know, this is an interesting thing. I'm on Zoloft, you know.
Because are you working for them? Are you their spokesman? No, you're on Zoloft. Now, let me ask you just
Let me finish the thought. Then I'm on Zoloft, and it really helps me. I think there are definitely drawbacks, and one of the drawbacks, I mean, it really helps me because I was having incredible anxiety stuff, and I needed something, so I went on Zoloft. But one thing I think is that it does kind of keep me away from that kernel of trauma that exists in me. Do you know what I mean? And I still choose to be on this Zoloft, you know. And
so it keeps you away from it. Keeps you away from
well,
it.
Well, it kind of buffers you a little bit from. And if you need Zoloft, I am distributing it out of the trunk of my car where the 405 meets the 101.
Yes. Is it Sepulveda? Because I'll go to Sepulveda.
Sepulveda. Yes, exactly.
Listen, if I could find something like that, the thing is, I have never found any like drug that actually speaks to what's going on with me.
Really?
I've never found anyone. And I have wild swings if I get off of something. So I'm actually on Wellbutrin for many years because I don't want to come off of it because I know I'll have a big reaction to it.
Wow. I know. I got off of Prozac before this Zoloft. I was off of Prozac. Before I went back on antidepressants, I was off of Prozac for, I think, 40 years. And going off of Prozac was a lot more difficult than I thought. I was having some pretty, major mood swings myself, and I was doing it the way that, you know, incrementally. You have to, I mean, I'm sure you can get off of, how long have you been taking Wellbutrin?
Oh, a long time. I actually knew the guy who invented it. That's how long we were buddies. And he said, why don't you try this?
Let me ask you this. Was it before the Caravaggio exhibit at the Lochner Museum?
It was actually during the time of Caravaggio that he was painting. And he was like, I'm making painting. And I said, I want to take a drug.
By the way, that Italian accent is what I'm talking about when I say
slander.
Let's pause for the victims of everything.
Now, I will say, like my Italian roommates used to say, non prende mangiero, sto parlando seriamente.
Which means
I'm not making fun, I'm talking seriously. They would say that to me all the time. And then they'd say, Ed, where are you running to? He's always running. He's always running. Yeah.
I'm Sicilian and I love the Italians, man.
Oh, yeah.
Don't cross them, but I love them.
Well, the Sicilians, if you listen to Mario Puzo talk about where he got the pacing and the flowery language for the gangsters and the Godfather, it's all Sicilian because this is how they talk. They believe in getting the money up front. And the way they do it is they write you a nice flowery letter. They call you and they compliment you. You're a wonderful person. We're so lucky to be your neighbor. And all we need is this $50,000 and we'll just be done with it and it'll be fine. Yeah. And that's how they used to approach people.
I feel like it's the same at the Hollywood Bowl.
It's very similar. Don't go there during Sicilian night because they will, that music.
Yeah.
Opera. You know, I've never been to a live, I've seen it on TV. I've seen movies. I've listened to music, but I've never been to the opera.
Oh yeah. It's great. Sometimes it can be real long.
Why is it going? Yeah. It's four days is a long time. Wagner 4 days, but the Italian operas.
Oh, the Wagner Ring cycle is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have it on my washing machine. There's a lot of things here. Big things. Do you believe? So let me ask you something about the trauma, okay? So if it didn't keep the trauma away, do you believe that you could have the trauma and move through it?
Well, that's no. I'm like I said, I'm choosing to be on Zoloft, and you know what I'm hoping to do is work. Because my anxiety or depression, it's so hard to like separate anxiety and depression. I never know what to call it. I know they're linked. They're like a vaudeville team. Hey, anxiety, yeah, depression.
As popular as Burns and Allen, at least.
say good night, anxiety.
That's actually a good sketch.
They're both like self-attacking, but I think I couldn't work with the trauma off of Zoloft either. I don't think. I think you have to find a balance.
You find the balance. That's right. Yeah. You find out what works for you. And there are a lot of different things. It's not one thing. There's a lot of different things. But the thing that you're doing in the morning where you're saying, I'm going to do this and this is what I'm doing for myself, this is self-care, is it sends ripples through not only your life, but everybody that you come in contact with. I believe that.
Yeah.
I believe that. Except for comedy club bookers. That is not going to help.
Well, with that they have kind a lot of people. Of walls. They have a lot of walls around them.
In the club and emotionally. Yes, it's true. Now, I want to go to something here because your tweets have always been legendary. But I want to go and just look and I want to just dissect what's going on here and what you think of it. And like, see, my question is, when you write a tweet, can you when you do something like this, can you then, I mean, it's hysterical. And then it can you then go away from it and say, and now I'm going to, you know, a more peaceful place and have
more
that back in. A peaceful place.
Oh, yeah.
So this is the tweet. The American landscape is one of fear, violence, suicides, mass shootings, and great savings. Here at Walmart, our employees have to apply for food stamps while we accumulate obscene money. That's the American way. We lower our prices by using overseas labor that isn't regulated. First of all, Walmart is a sponsor of the show, so I wanted to just read that to just say, you know, it's maybe instructional for them, but I also want to see, okay, so, yeah. So you write this tweet. So this goes out, it's hysterical. Mm-hmm. And sure. Then you're able to disconnect and you're able to say, okay, that's my tweet for the day or for the hour or for one of five. And now, but I've stayed away from social media in the early part of the day so that I'm grounded. Right. And I can do these things.
Yeah, but you know, it's a double-edged sword though with social media because I put a tweet like that out, and if you know when I know that it's funny, right? When I know, ooh, this is a good one. You know how we know when something is good, like when we come up with a joke, and I do get excited about that, and I do think I get a little overstimulated because then, sort of like again checking the Red Sox score, I go back. Hi, Katie. My cat is wanting to say hello.
Hi, Katie. How are you now? Hi. When did Katie get off of Zoloft, or is Katie on?
Katie is on a variety of temptation treats that the doctor has prescribed.
Oh, good. That's
She's
good.
On salmon and Lipitor.
Well, you know, Lipitor is very popular with the cat community.
It really is. It really is. No, but what I was going to say is that when I do tweet out something funny, I then get pulled into like, ooh, how many people like it? Who likes it? Are there verified people liking it? And you know, it's not easy. You know, some days I'm better at saying, okay, I this is what I tell myself, that I'm on social media to keep my profile high as a comic, etc.
Right.
And you know, I wonder if I sometimes, you know, I wonder if I should just get off of social media because, you know, it's like it can be a place where you live your life, you know, in this virtual reality way instead of living it in a real way.
I think it could be a good creative like stimulation to be able to just write these things and come up with these things, and that we're comics, we want to create things, that we're always going to be creating things. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, what would happen probably if I got off of it completely, and I'm not nearly, I mean, I'm hardly on social media, but what would happen is your life would be good. It would actually not make it wouldn't be like, oh, I really miss social media. It might be that way for short periods of time, but it would be, your life would be enriched with other things, and it would be, and you wouldn't be caught up in it. Not that you are caught up in it, because you don't just, I mean, most people just do that and they don't have other things that they choose.
Yeah. Last night I decided to do a show in an outdoor venue. What is it, Katie? In an outdoor venue. And the reason I did it was for no money, but I knew there would be a big audience and I needed the human contact.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to do it because I wanted to, you know, do my humor three-dimensionally, which is so much more rewarding than online, you know?
Sure, sure. There is no substitute for that. And I feel like even though it's very easy to watch streaming movies and it's great and series and all those things, there is no substitute for going into a theater and sitting in front of a big screen with other people.
That's true too.
There really isn't, and never I don't know if it ever will be. It's a live shared experience. The live shared experiences are really important ones.
I think the key is shared. You know, we need to be in community, you know.
Yeah. But I find that I get, you know, the more isolated that I am, the more I become used to it, and the more everything seems like a big deal. It's like even phone calls. It's like, how do I not have time for phone calls? It's crazy. Like, how do I not have time for phone calls?
I get the same way too.
Well, it's like I think, oh my God, that's going to take a long time. Well, what are you doing that it's going to take time from? You know, what great thing am I doing?
Well, you know, one thing I heard this, and this is from Eckhart Tolle. I heard it. He says that our biggest addiction is to our thoughts. And I think we don't want to leave our thoughts and do the phone call, even if the thoughts are painful. We're addicted.
Yeah. Yeah. There is a quality of, you know, if you just had the peace and quiet, your brain would say, let's look for the issues and let's start thinking about not here. We're thinking about the future or the past for sure. That happens, you know, 36 hours of a 24-hour day. And it's just what you say to those, you know, how am I going to see? This is the thing that we're like working with Jennifer was really good, because I really never looked at, I didn't really look at thoughts and emotions as a two-way conversation. I thought it was just, you have thoughts and that's what you think.
Yeah.
I thought you have feelings, not realizing that they come from thoughts. Mm-hmm. And this is what it is. And then I read Marcus Aurelius, not really, but I look a little bit about him because I love his quotes.
He's great. Mark
was a wonderful man. He was not a great conversationalist, but Mark was great. No. But the happiness of your life depends upon the quality of your thoughts. Well, that's Marcus Aurelius.
You know, what's interesting is that Hawkins says, and I really do recommend you and your listeners to get familiar with David Hawkins's work. Power versus Force is one book. I'm blanking on the others, but and you can also watch him on YouTube. But he says that the emotions generate thoughts, and that the witnessing is really witnessing and letting the emotions come and go, because the one emotion can generate, you know, 1,000 thoughts you know, so what you're talking about with Marcus Aurelius, you know, who was a good buddy of, I believe it was Chuck Woolery. I forget, but
he was on the show, early days of the show.
but you know, is Hawkins is saying we need to like let the emotions go, like, you know, again, and it dovetails beautifully into Buddhism, you know, just detaching, like letting our, you know, emotions pass like clouds, and that will then clear up our thinking. So I guess it's dialectical, though, that it goes back and forth.
It's an ongoing dialogue. It's a river. But if you block it up and you let it run, or you think it means something, or you stop it, which is, you know, what we, you know, what I walk around with and what a lot of people walk around with is this, you know, that all of that stuff bottled up that just wants to go.
Yeah. And the emotions, I think, are very related to trauma, which we touched on earlier, you know.
It all comes around to trauma, no matter, you know, and I always like to encircle the show with trauma. Because yeah. No matter where you are, mm-hmm. you know, we're all in this together. Well, listen, I, you know, Fancy Monkey mm-hmm. could be, but it's always, you know, I love talking to you. It's so much fun. And my thanks to Eddie, as always. Listen to his podcasts. Follow him on Twitter. My thanks to Jennifer Kalari. Find out more about Jennifer's great work, her media, her books, her services at connectedparenting.com, connectedparenting.com. Find us at makelightmedia.com, M-A-K-E-L-I-G-H-T, makelightmedia.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, join us, be a bridge, walk on us. If you have any issue that we can help with, please shoot us a note at ed@makelight, M-A-K-E-L-I-G-H-T, media.com. That's our show for this week. Thanks for listening. Keep coming back at Works If You Work It. I'm Ed Krasnick. See you next week.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.